Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly. I am your host, Bill Sickens. With me, my co-host Gretchen and Bill. Welcome to this week's show.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is the part where you say hi.
I was thinking about mimicking you. I am your host. This is the user-friendly show.
You know, if I could get William Shatner as a guest on this show, I'd love it. William, if you're listening, please give me a call. We'd love to have you on the show. That being said, we're going to be talking Comic-Cons this week. Bill, you went to one, and our comic-friendly host Michael went to another one. One in Nevada and one up in Montreal, Canada. So we'll be getting into that in a little bit here and talking about summer Comic-Cons. And it has been communicated to us that it might be time for us, we'd have to do it next year at this point, to think about going back down to San Diego again. It's been a couple of years, or actually 6 years. So yeah. It's been a while. And it might be fun to see that again too. But without any, you know, there's a lot of people covering that, and the ones that we got a chance to go to are a little less covered, so I think that they're just as important, and it's kind of fun to be able to hear about both things, but I wouldn't mind doing the other one again. We'll have to see what happens next year, but it's that time of year again, and we have Rose City coming up next month, Gretchen, so
I'm looking forward to that one doing too. That one.
Yeah. Yeah, so, all right, well, and that, without any further ado, let's go ahead and do the news, and then we'll circle back to Comic-Cons. What do we have in the news this week?
All right. Parents warned to change passwords now as game popular with kids linked to mother of all data breaches.
Okay, so the game is Roblox, and as the headline seemed to read, the biggest data breach, you know, ever, all this kind of thing.
They're always
this
that
is
way.
A bigger one. Yeah, well, and the thing of it is they're not sensationalizing. It's just everyone has more passwords stolen, this one being at 16 billion, like you said. So, just at the end of the day, these numbers are absolutely incredible. And this is one where you probably do or definitely should change your password on some of these accounts if it's a site that's been affected. And from what is coming out here, that includes passwords from Apple, Facebook, Google, GitHub, Telegram, Discord, Microsoft, and the list goes on. So basically the problem that this creates is, number of things. Children are involved, number one. So that makes it a little bit more intense than some of the others would be. What happens is the bad guys will get in, they hijack your account on your social media or whatever password they got, make themselves look like you, try to sell your friends things, stuff like that. A lot of us have seen that happen. Holding the account hostage, using your identity for malicious activity, and now your kids could be involved with this. Phishing messages to your contacts, attempt to use your password on your other accounts. And this is one of the ones where in a perfect world, you would use a different password for every online account. Now, being that on the average last year was 90, I think we're over 100 accounts each of us have online now, that would be very difficult to do. So I break mine down into components where all of my banking and healthcare does have individual passwords. And then the other stuff, each social media account would have its own. And then the other stuff that isn't quite as important, I will share between. Sometimes. But the thing of it is again, it doesn't matter in this case if you had separate passwords because it seems like a lot of them have gotten out. They're being sold on the dark web, and you, or the bad guys, I hope you wouldn't do this, but the bad guys go out and purchase these blocks for different information to do different things that they want to do. And this kind of exposure gets very intense. By the way, the size of the file they found was 47 gigabytes.
Jeez.
Of all text data. And for anybody that knows computers, that's a lot of text data.
So I have a question. What was the game that was that was popular with the kids?
Roblox.
Ah,
Roblox. Okay. R-O-B-L-O-X. So
Tesla's autopilot is under scrutiny in rare jury trial.
Fatal crash happened back in 2019, and it's actually going to trial. And the jurors are being asked to weigh in on whether Tesla is at fault. In the past, they've been able to dodge responsibility for these things. So this is kind of interesting. I think this is, I don't know if it's the first one that's actually going before a jury, but this is somewhat unusual for this to actually happen. And the idea here is that does the autopilot system, as it was defined at the time, mean that it was autonomous driving? Was that what was presented? Some schools of thought say, yes, that's what Tesla was saying. Some are saying no. And did the system itself cause the crash? So these are some of the things that are going to have to be determined in this case and will determine where liability lies with this. It's kind of a big deal, too, because it isn't just one plaintiff that's suing Tesla. It's if they did decide that Tesla had liability, this could set a precedent on other cases, too. So there's a lot riding on this. That's going to be interesting to see where it goes. And if the plaintiffs do win in this case, I have a feeling this is going to be in appeals for a while. But we'll follow this and let you know what happens when we know.
The Perseids, considered the best meteor shower of the year, are about to begin.
Yeah, and it actually started on Thursday. It runs through the 23rd, and the peak time, the best time to see this, is going to be in mid-August. And they describe this as swift and bright meteors leaving long wakes of light and color behind as they streak through the Earth's atmosphere. Hopefully I'll have a better chance of seeing this than the Aurora Borealis.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're also known for their fireballs, which are larger explosions of light and color that persist longer than the average meteor streak. Something interesting to look at. And you can see these with the naked eye and certainly a ground-based telescope. So it is, I think this one we'll have to check out, see if we can get some pictures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talking about pictures, Denmark launches a new law about facial ownership.
Yeah, this has to do with deepfakes, with AI, and is something that is definitely behind the times with the way the law is able to address it. What Denmark has said, and what I've been told about this, is that the law says the citizens now own the copyright to their own face, voice, and body. I'm not sure that seems almost common sense in a way to me, but
yeah,
it is now on the books there. And the idea being is that would give you control if someone uses your likeness without your permission, that type of a thing, which is becoming more and more common. I mean, the ability to do this is here. It works quite well. We don't have the artifacting we once did. And in another year, I don't think we will at all. So maybe hopefully they can do something to address this here and in the UK and other places that haven't yet. Because I think it is important to, you know, you want to have control over your own body. Well, you certainly should have control over your own image as well, in my humble opinion.
Following YouTube, Meta announces crackdown on unoriginal Facebook content.
Yeah, and the numbers on this are kind of interesting. So to start with this, Meta has taken down this year alone over 10 million profiles that were impersonating other people, like large content creators. And starting to work with YouTube, I'm seeing where this has happened a lot on that end as well. And what people will do is get out there, take some of your videos, if it's YouTube, some of your posts, if it's Facebook, you know, whatever the case may be with the content, create an account that looks just like yours as a one-off, and then start going around and impersonating you. So some of the YouTube channels that I follow that I like are having things where the, you know, they'll have, I don't know, say 100,000 followers, right, or more, the bigger ones are more. And the bad guys will be able to go out and say, hey, I'm fundraising for a project, send money here, you know, that kind of thing. And from that standpoint, that definitely can create a problem for the creator. It certainly defrauds the people thinking that they're giving back to that creator. So on the heels of YouTube, which started really getting aggressive about this in the last year, Meta is also doing the same thing across their platforms. I don't know if there's a way set up to report this yet. There is on YouTube. There's a report button. Meta, I would imagine, will eventually do the same thing. But at the end of the day, unoriginal content is being considered something that you shouldn't use. That doesn't mean that you can't share your friends' posts once in a while and memes and all that kind of thing. But if you're making yourself look exactly like somebody else, you're probably going to get your account taken down or at least suspended.
Disney fans horrified at Park's new exhibit with animatronic Walt Disney.
Yeah, so when I heard this headline, I was thinking melting skin, like something out of The Simpsons where the animatronic thing catches on fire, you know?
Oh, when you said melting skin, I was thinking Raiders of the Lost Ark, okay?
Yeah, you know, or liquid skin on the Terminator, which, by the way, if we ever had that technology, I'd still be a volunteer for, but that's beside the point. So what's happening here is Disney fans are reacting to a new exhibit that's been put up representing Walt Disney. So Disneyland's 70th anniversary started this, and Imagineering put out a sneak peek at what this is going to be. It's on Main Street, and it's Walt in his office doing whatever it is he's doing. I don't have the whole show in front of me, but the feedback has been that, well, you didn't capture Walt and his likeness and all this kind of thing. It's a hit and a miss or kind of thing. So, and then other people generally are happy with what they see. And I think what this is with animatronics, being able to capture somebody exactly as they were when they were alive, I'm not sure if that would even be possible. I know it's not easy to do things like that and have it look good. So from what I see, it is actually a respectful representation. It just may not be very accurate. And that is what people are acting on as far as being quote unquote horrified.
Yeah. It makes me think of the Arby's commercials with James Earl Jones. He's not around anymore. They must have permission to use his voice, but it doesn't sound, I mean, it sounds like him, but it doesn't sound like him.
Yeah, we actually covered that a while back. There's a whole AI thing going on that he'd given permission and some things like that that is very interesting. Now, I will just sum this up. And again, this is my opinion. So when brand management sends me a letter later today, just know it's my opinion. But the word Arby's makes me horrified. So there you are.
But they've got the meats.
I don't know if I go that far, but anyway, they've got something. If you like Arby's, I sincerely apologize. It's just not my thing.
But the voice is different. His real voice had a deeper, more robust quality to it. And this one sort of sounds like him, but not quite right. So I don't know. Every time I hear it, my opinion is
it's missing the emotional context.
Maybe that's what it is.
Recreated.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have his
energy,
sentience behind it. Energy. Yeah.
All right.
Definitely agree with you on that.
Speaking of energy, Fitbit app was having trouble earlier this week.
Yeah, this happened Thursday morning and the app went down. And for anybody that uses Fitbit, which is a lot of people, myself included, and Gretchen, I think you use one of these too.
Yeah.
It just got to a point where you couldn't log into the app. So we survived all of that. It was for about 4 hours and they got things back up and online. But it is interesting because from time to time, we are seeing that a lot of these different services will have problems. And the question started coming in, is XYZ app down, you know, whatever that may be. And the way that you check that out is there's a number of sites that you're reporting on it. The one I use is one called downdetector.com. And you can go there and just punch in the service that you're wanting to see if it's up and running. And what they do is they track the number of reports. So it's a crowdsource thing of what is up and what is down. And when the reports start to peak, then it's considered down. It'll give you that information. It's free to use and all that kind of stuff. But it is one resource to be able to go out. And if you are trying to log on to something and it doesn't work, you can check there to see if the problem is with the provider's end, or maybe if you're having some kind of a computer problem, you know, just to be able to track that down and that type of a thing. And then the other thing that's beneficial from this too, is when something is down, you can check in with that later to see if it's been restored instead of having to try to get back onto the original provider where it might lock up or something. So from that standpoint, that is something that is a good place to check it out. We get a lot of questions on this, which is why I wanted to cover that a little bit, because it is a one-stop place to be able to get that type of information. So anyway, downdetector.com, they're not a sponsor or anything, just a site I use that I've had good luck with for this. So that's what we got in the news. So let's go ahead and circle around to Comic-Con. And Bill, I'm going to put you on stage here because you just went to one.
Yep, Silver Age Comic-Con here in Reno, Nevada.
So it's interesting. It's been 2 years for me. I loved it when I was there. So tell us about it.
Well, it's a small comic convention put on here in the Reno Tahoe Convention Center. They bring in a lot of good names like Adam Baldwin, who was a Full Metal Jacket and Firefly notoriety. And it was just a really great convention, other than I would say their new ticket system was a little bit buggy. Not buggy, but a problem.
All right. So you eventually got in. What happened?
Well, what they decided to do was go through Ticketmaster. So you had to have your tickets on your phone, and they didn't have con badges. So you had to go through, get scanned, and all your tickets, you had to be together. And as a group, if you had more than one ticket. And if you had to leave, you had to be together for that, too, or with the phone.
Wow.
I could see where that would be.
Yeah, that could be really difficult.
Best practice. I
I've been to two of these. I went to there was one that I went with Jeremy, which I think might have been their first year in Reno. And then I went to the next one I went to was with you guys after Jeremy was gone. And then, but we did. I don't remember having trouble with passes or tickets.
Well, we had badges.
Yeah.
We had badges.
They were badges until last year.
Oh.
They had badges last year. And they decided to go Ticketmaster this year, so it cost a little bit more. And, you know, they had service fees and other things that kind of ramped up the cost. And I mean, I'm not saying that it wasn't a great convention. I'm just saying it was a little bit pricier than usual.
I think we're hitting on this because this to me is a little unusual. I hadn't heard of doing that before so they didn't have a box office, I assume, then either. You had to go through and pay the service fees. Okay. Yeah, I could see where people would grumble about something like that. Hopefully they look at that and make some changes for next year. Kind of funny because our guest next week is going to be talking about this a little bit too on these type of sites and some of the goods and the bads. So it's just interesting that this came up now. So, all right. Well, outside of not being able to get in and out in a clean way, how was the convention itself?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was set up correctly. You know, that's usually a big problem with some. This one was set up very openly, very easy to get through. There was no, you know, overcrowding in aisles or anything. Wonderful local artists, lots of vendors for comics and other things. One of them, my favorite, the Lego minifig vendor was there this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I almost bought you a minifig bet, Gretchen, because I know you like Darth Nihilus, but they were sold out, afraid. They did have a Revan that I got.
Cool.
Amazing. But yeah, he's got some great stuff. I remember him. And I remember that the year we went. I don't know. Is it still only one day?
Nope, it was Saturday and Sunday.
The year we went was just one day, but it was the same type of thing. Their layout was cool. You could get to everything. The only problem they had that year was the aisles ended against the wall, so you had to do a U-turn, but I mean, that was very manageable. And like you say, it was laid out where the different things were in different places, and they had some really unique things. Are any local vendors or vendors in general that kind of stood out to you, Bill?
Oh, there was plenty of interesting ones. There was one that did a Call of Cthulhu campaign. She had a very interesting booth. Molly was there and was able to roll some dice and ended up winning a little tiny Cthulhu plushie.
That's cool. I'd be interested to see what that looks like, but okay.
Oh, yeah. It was one of Squishables, so it was quite a cute little thing.
A cute Cthulhu. Okay. Well, anything's possible.
There was a lot of local boat vendors. Some comic book artists, as usual, selling their new comics. Local vendors, Tucker from Cardboards was there with his booth. Long time on our show for his wares.
You said they had some talent. Did you have autograph signings and all that kind of stuff? Or how did that work?
Yeah, they had their own little section up front that was cordoned off for that, for the guests and their managers, I guess.
Yeah.
Right, sure.
So, like I said, they had Adam Baldwin, who was there from Full Metal Jacket, and Firefly was more what he was probably known for by most people.
Yeah.
Olivia Diabo, who was Karen Arnold in Wonder Years, Amy Allen, who I think Gretchen might recognize as being Ayla Secura, Star Wars.
She was one of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Okay, I was about to think the world wasn't right if you didn't know a Star Wars reference, Gretchen. You saved
I usually don't hear her name pronounced. I usually just see it written, and I've never heard it pronounced. So it's kind of like, eh?
Voice actor Tony Oliver was there. John St. John, who did Duke Nukem.
Duke Nukem. Yep. Yeah, I remember.
He was also a broadcast actor. I believe a lot of commercials, infomercials, multimedia and video game projects. He also worked on World of Warcraft, Half-Life, just to name a couple. Stephen Constantino. I'm probably saying that wrong. Constantino, sorry. I apologize to you out there if you're listening.
That name is familiar. What was he in?
I believe he was in Star Wars, Return of the Jedi. Let's see here. What was he for? Gamorrean Guard.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Gamorreans. I had a photo of it. I just couldn't remember what it was.
I bet you he's done other things because the name sounds familiar. Like maybe he's worked on other Star Wars projects or something, you know?
Oh, I'm sure he has.
It's a great lineup for a small convention or you know, one that's not in San Diego or, you know, Seattle or something. Yeah. So that's really, it's good to hear that this is successful because I know the year that we went and Gretchen, I know you did it 2 years and Bill, you've been there, I think pretty much every year, but when I went the one time, it felt like a fun thing. It just, the atmosphere was fun. There didn't feel like anything heavy. It was just a nice day. So I'm glad to hear that this is growing and is now 2 days long and still is worth checking out. And it probably would even be worth working through the Ticketmaster thing, but hopefully that's going to be a one-off.
It kind of fills that void for Wizard World that went away.
Yeah.
Cause that was, people loved that. And that felt that filled that niche that people in that area needed. And so I'm hoping this one will continue to grow and become really successful.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, and that, also had that's really
digital comic book artists too.
The comic book artist, yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, like Luis Rivera, Floyd Ben Sumner. Yeah, they had some other good ones there too, just to name a couple.
Yeah, it's just, and I've said this before. I love seeing what artists can do, mainly because I can't. I know what I like, you know, but I just don't have that talent. So it's amazing to see people that can literally create something from nothing and do such an amazing job at it, you know? So, that's really, really cool. All right. So this sounds like one that next year will be worth checking out again, too, assuming it's there. And I know, you know, it's been interesting in Reno, like you say, Gretchen, with Wizard World, they were there for a couple of years, but I think it just wasn't a big enough market for them. And there's been some others that have come and gone over the years. And it seems like Silver Age is one that's locked in and there to stay and doing it right. And bringing in the talent and the interest and everything like that. So that's really cool to do. The other one was the anime comp, Snafu. Are they still producing that?
As far as I know, they are.
That's around Halloween. Yeah, that was another one that always was very interesting. And, you know, so there is some good events that are done in the area, but it's kind of hard because when your market is not big enough for the big ones, but not small enough for doing some small town thing, you have to be able to hit the niche. And unless you can do that, you're not going to be successful. And it sounds like these actually have gotten to that point. So that's really cool. Well, next segment, we're going to be stepping into large city, Montreal, Canada, Comic-Con. Our host from Comic Friendly is going to be joining us, Michael, to talk about what he saw at that event and has some four interviews and some other things for us. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. Joining us now, Michael Regina, host of Comic Friendly 2.0. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill. Nice to be here.
So I hear you got to go to a Comic-Con.
I did. I was lucky enough to be able to attend Laval Comic-Con, which is just a suburb outside of Montreal. It was a lot of fun, and I definitely loved being able to speak to all the people that were attending. The vendors, the writers and artists that were there, it was an absolute blast.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. I'm a little bit jealous. I haven't been able to get to one yet this year. So now I'm definitely going to make that happen.
Very cool.
All right. I see you got some interviews live on the floor and it sounds absolutely amazing. Why don't you go ahead and introduce your first one and let us know a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was passing through the con, what I had done was I was really, I took a mental note of the artists that really captured my eye, because at these conventions, of course, they're showcasing their wares, they're selling their independent books or their even their published work. And so one of these artists named Eric Taran Mullins, which I have some audio for, was really a standout. He was really, really interesting because he writes his own manga, does a lot of work regarding that, and is really, really interesting in terms of how visualized, how his visuals were really, really popping. And so I just sat down with him and I just had a chat and just wanted to see what he was all about.
Well, let's check it out.
Today in particular, I'm selling a whole bunch of my prints and fan art that I made, along with some of my own original characters that I've drawn that come from my own manga comic that I write, illustrate, and self-publish. And I also have a couple of sketchbooks, which is great practice.
So what's the importance of coming to events like this and meeting people and getting yourself out there?
Well, I guess it can be different depending on what most people's merchandise is, but because myself in particular, being a self-publisher, I'm here just to get people to see my comic, read my comic, and hopefully become fans for life.
What kind of questions do you get asked most?
What's this about? But genuinely, people will ask what it's about and things like that, because that's usually the front forerunner of everything that I sell at my conventions.
Very cool. Can you explain a little bit of the formats you use, like what kind of tools you use?
So I tend to use a program called Clip Studio Pro. It's all 100% digital. It's not that I don't like drawing like physically and traditionally by hand. I have a couple drawings here. I love it. It's just because I do everything on my own, I need to go as fast as possible. And that means digital, 100%. So I tend to start off with Clip Studio Pro. It's a Japanese illustration program where then I use Photoshop to do a lot of the special effects, and then Illustrator to pop in all of the text bubbles and things like that, and then InDesign to package. I really use multiple programs to do multiple things.
Well, he sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah. What I love most was about him and also all the other artists were the hustle. These guys attend a lot of conventions. They are traveling most of the time, especially on weekends. And they have, you know, other 9-to-5 jobs. And so to be able to pack up your stuff, go from one place to another, and really just set yourself up and be really open and receiving all these questions and comments from fans was really, really interesting. Case in point, I actually met two local comic artists from Quebec who have worked with various publishers, and they've found a way to self-publish some work through Kickstarters. They found a way to work with small independent publishers. So Etienne, who I met, has a new series out called Dead Kingdom, published by Red 5 Comics, and he was eager to show it to me. It's basically medieval zombies, and I loved it right away, and I picked up Volume 1. I thought it was really, really great, and I thought his comments were really interesting.
Okay, I already want to see this just from your description. All right, let's jump to his interview.
Actually, this is my comic book. I'm the writer and the artist. My friend here is the letterer. We're in the comics. I was happy to find a publisher called Red 5 Comics in the States, and they decided to publish my comic. Okay. It's called Dead Kingdom. It's medieval, zombies, magic, fantastic settings. We're already up to 2 volumes, and we're already working on a volume 3. So this is the trade for volume 1. We have the single issue for volume 2. And we have a limited edition volume 2 trade paperback.
Okay.
So if people like zombies, like medieval setting magic, it'll be a perfect read for them.
When did you get started?
For Dead Kingdom, I started this project about four years ago. So it's getting better. The writing is getting better. So I started working on other project, indie project also. So it's going good.
What do you like about coming to places like this and meeting people?
All the diversity you see different artists, different skills. You see comics, you see posters, you see jewelry, you see everything. So it's a melting pot of everything we love about the culture, about geek culture.
You know, you were talking about it earlier, but it is amazing to think about how much work actually goes into the promotion of something that you do on your own. And, you know, you think about putting things together, whether it's a comic book or fiction or whatever, and there's the going through, writing it, editing it, doing artwork and all that kind of stuff. But then there's this part of it, you know, and it's just amazing to hear from some of these people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they work so hard in just delivering a product, and then, you know, on top of that, going out there, making a name for themselves, networking. It's all really about networking. And yeah, it must be exhausting, especially to some of these artists who may be more inclined to be, you know, happier to be sitting quietly in a room working on their art instead of speaking to people 24/7. But, you know, they know that it's part of the game. They know that's how they get their work out there and how they get more work. And so the next person who I spoke to is very much like this. His name was Jerome Gagnon. Another local Quebec artist who has worked on countless issues, both direct to market, independent, through Kickstarters. What was interesting about Jerome is that he's a letterer. So it's a bit of a niche field for him to be in. And I did ask him about that. I asked him, you know, about lettering and why that and how that is different from just artists and writers who really get the spotlight shined on them, whereas letterers kind of are a niche within a niche. So it was really interesting to hear what he had to say.
Amazing. Let's go back to the floor and let's hear it.
These are all comics that I'm working on. I'm a graphic designer by trade, and I decided to try my hand at comic book lettering. I've met a guy through Facebook. His name is Travis Gibb. He lives in Florida. We started working together, and we've been doing all these books for the past 6 years together. We finance them through Kickstarter campaigns, and the goal is always to try to find a new publisher to publish our books through a direct market. For some we did. We got a few books that were published.
And why do you love coming to conventions?
Well, conventions, because we do Kickstarter campaigns, conventions for us is a way to promote our books, gain new readers, and met with actual readers, mm-hmm. try to grow the community as well.
A letterer, it's a little bit different than an artist, a writer.
Yeah.
Do you feel you're in a different niche being a letterer? Like, do you guys have a community together of letterers and this kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, it's weird for conventions because a lot of people don't really understand what it's about. Mm-hmm. It's very specific part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
Being an artist, it's easy. I mean, you draw the page, you draw the cover.
Mm.
Writers, you're deep in the story. You know what the story is about. But we're kind of at the end of the process.
Mm-hmm.
People don't always get it. Some are really impressed by the work behind the letters, but so I need to explain it with a lot of customers.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's great to be able to hear the audio from your interviews, but I'm just want to put this out there because you host your YouTube channel, Read the Freaking Comics, and my understanding is that you have the video of some of these up there or are going to. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do have the video up from Laval Comic Con. So if you check out Read the Freaking Comics or even go to readthefreakingcomics.com, which is a new URL, you can check out the video. It's right there. You'll see a shiny stormtrooper as the thumbnail. You can click on that and you'll be able to see a lot of the interviews that I had and go through a lot of the amazing visuals that I shared. So it was really a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and this will be one worth checking out because a lot of this is a visual medium, and to be actually able to see, in addition to just the interviews, which are amazing, but to be able to see what they have done is just incredible.
Yeah, and this is absolutely perfect lead-in for the next person I met. Her name is Joanne Deschenes, and she works with charcoals and pencils, and she creates really hyper-realistic drawings of characters from all across different mediums. So there's Star Trek, Lord of the Rings. There was all kinds of different characters. And when I say hyper realistic, I mean these look like photos. I mean it's really, really amazing work. And it was amazing to hear that she had only picked this up since the pandemic. Only since 2020 had she been starting to do this work. So it was really, really interesting to see how well she has gone in 5 years. It was really stunning work, and I had to sort of stop and chat with her because I was really, really impressed with her work.
Let's check it out.
this is all your work here?
Yes.
What are you working? Is it? It looks like, is it pencils or charcoal or
charcoal pencils?
Beautiful, beautiful
Thank
work.
You.
How long have you been? Have you been an artist?
5 years.
Only five.
It began with the pandemic.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thank you.
How long does it take to finish a piece?
About a month.
A month.
A few hours a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
You like coming to conventions? You like to meet
yes,
people?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I really like it. Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes.
Do you sell these online? Do you sell the? How else?
Yes,
do you
sell? I have a an Etsy boutique.
Okay.
An Etsy shop.
Yeah.
Online, and I also have Instagram account.
Okay. Okay.
And a Facebook page. And
what would you say is your most popular drawing that you do?
Wednesday.
Wednesday is popular, yeah?
Without any hesitation. Wednesday, yes.
You know, I have a great deal of respect for the artist. I can't draw a straight line. I know what art I like, but to be able to create something from nothing like that is just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually went to college for art and still never managed to be able to draw a face as well as what I saw there today. And you know, all these artists that I love and appreciate, it's quite clearly an art because it is really, really amazing to see some of these people's work. Really, really envious and you know, in a very positive way, I'm envious of their skills and capabilities. I also spoke to quite a few independent vendors who were there as well. And it was great to see a lot of them sharing their passion for comics, books, games, toys, and retail as well. And I spoke to Domenico, who is basically a part-time vendor. He has no brick and mortar presence at all. So his main stock in trade is attending conventions with his wares. And what he does is he shares, he lays out his issues, his card stocks, whatever he has that he's trying to sell, and really starts to network with people. And people start to follow him where he goes to different conventions to pick up the things that they're looking for. So Domenico was a really interesting chat because, typically you picture vendors as these large corporations or large companies that attend these things. But, you know, Domenico sort of does this as a passion. And he was there with his whole family and it was really, really fun to see. So, we spoke for a little bit.
All right, well, let's go back to the floor and check it out.
So explain to me what you got here.
We've got comic books, we've got Pokemon stuff, you know, anything, Warhammer. Anything you find in a normal hobby store, I guess.
And coming to conventions, is this like the best way to reach people and get...
It is, because you get to spend a lot of time speaking with people, you get to know their interests, and you know, when you start doing a lot of conventions, you start seeing some familiar faces, and it brings the community together. It's awesome. I like it a lot.
What's the number one thing people ask you?
A lot of people ask me, you know, how much these books are worth, and what should I get? But in the end, I always tell them, look, pick out what you like, especially just start reading, and you're going to find out what you do like and what you get into.
Absolutely.
That's why I tell people all the time.
Is there any golden nugget people are looking for? They come to ask you, do you have this?
You know, aside from first appearances and stuff, people really like things that are outside of comics. You know, like, let's say, for example, you know, Sonic. Sonic sells really well. And Adventure Time. You know, Adventure Time did stuff as a kind of as a TV show, so they like to see that in comics too, because they can extend their interest into that, right? Don't just stuck watching the shows, like also extend it into comic books and read more on it.
You know, you talk about vendors, and this is one of my favorite things about events like Comic Cons and specialty things like that, because you see stuff you'll never see anywhere else. You won't even find these things on eBay or, you know, certainly not like Amazon or anything. And so much of the community is just mom-pop business that they're out there, they're doing something really cool and really unique. And the big boys are there too, but, and a lot of times have unique things as well, but it really is the heart and soul are these people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I spoke to quite a few vendors who, you know, they pack up their car and like I said, and they travel from show to show. And some of these are, you know, people who have toy shops or collectible shops, and you know, they pack their entire inventory into a trailer and head out and really, you know, love to make connections, love to give out their physical addresses, make sure people go check them out. I think it's I asked these vendors why it's important to come to conventions. Like, why do you like to come to conventions? And even the writers and artists, it was all about, you know, we get to actually meet people. And that's really what's key to them, is sort of meeting people, making those connections. And some of those connections can last for years and years. So it was a lot of fun. My last interview, speaking of fun, was with Ronald from Coffee to Comics. Coffee to Comics, I believe it's called, or Comics to Coffee. Comics on Coffee. That's what it is. And it was, it really caught my eye predominantly because of the amazing, alluring smell of coffee that was coming from his table, but also the eye-catching bags of coffee beans that he had with him. So what I saw when I passed by his booth was coffee bags with pictures of DC Comics characters, Ghost Machine Comics characters, and other comic characters. And I was really curious, and I approached him and I asked him, how did this all start? Because this is officially licensed stuff, so it's no knockoff coffees, no knockoff images. These are officially licensed coffees from different comic brands. And what is unique about each one is that they have their own unique flavor. So if you think of a poison ivy themed coffee, it's like a mint sort of themed tea or coffee.
That would be interesting.
And the one I picked up was Sinestro Core Yellow Lantern Coffee. So this was a medium roast with a chocolate flavor. There's an intense dark roast Batman coffee, that kind of thing. So it was really interesting to talk to him and get to know him a little bit more. And I've come to find it's a family business from the United States that is coming up to Canada and is expanding their coverage. So I was really interested to talk to him and find out a little bit more.
Now, sounds absolutely amazing. Well, let's hear what he had to say.
Comics and coffee. How did this get started? Okay, so this is a family business. It started a couple of years back in the U.S. by my cousins. They started, fixing their love of coffee and comics. They started with original creations, started in small markets, little shows. Then they worked their way up to larger conventions, and word got out. Somebody from DC contacted them, and they started working back and forth. That's how you get your Batman, your Sinestro. And after that, they started with a Ghost Machine. Same thing. They showed them the bags. They were like, hey, this is cool. Want to work? And then I don't have them with me, but we also got licensing with Warner Brothers to actually use Lord of the Rings properties. So that's pretty interesting also. So that's basically the quick story. That's how their story started. Then they were also trying to come over to Canada. So it was kind of a match made in heaven. I'm a geek. I love comics. I also love coffee. I'm from Honduras originally, so we love coffee over there. And they were like, you're the perfect mix for our Canadian market. So that's how I started helping out in shows, and now I'm basically the Canadian rep trying to make it work over here.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And so can you go through a couple of different coffees?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these are my last three different types. You got your third printing Batman right here, which is Todd McFarlane iconic cover. This is the last three bags of our Jason Fabok's second printing. These fortunately won't exist. Like I said, we follow a lot of comic books. So these are, you do a certain printing, then that doesn't exist anymore. It's also limited, which is a Sinestro, which is a medium dark roast, a little bit citrusy, chocolatey flavor. And then this one of our other licenses, Ghost Machine, which is a light roast, also chocolatey, citrusy kind of, but a lighter roast. And these are the ones I have with me. We got around 16 different types of coffees, which I'm in the process of start roasting here in Montreal, which is going to be, for example, a Superman Vanilla Mocha, Poison Ivy Mint. Got your Batgirl, which is a ginger coffee, Cyborg Candy Apple, so on and so forth. Trying to mix and match. That's what we do. And lastly, a tea line, which is just started also. That's going to be with our Lord of the Rings properties. Nice. The same thing. You got Gandalf on Earl Grey tea, Legolas on green tea. That's the kind of gist of it.
I'm ready for a cup of coffee myself. So it just sounds amazing. I've been to a few themed comic book shops where they do specialize in coffee, and some of them, one down in Reno even has a bar and all of that in there. And it is kind of cool to see that, and a lot of fun, and definitely something, like you say, that's very unique.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife and I could not resist. We picked up a bag ourselves. It is sitting in our kitchen waiting to be used. But it was a lot of fun. The entire event was a lot of fun. The Incredible Hulk's Lou Ferrigno was there. I could not land an interview, unfortunately. It was definitely a lot of fun. And I cannot wait to attend the Big Brother version of this convention. The Montreal Comic Con is happening in June. And so I'll be attending that one as well. And it'll be a ton of fun. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
No, sounds absolutely amazing. We can't wait to hear about that, too. But again, I want to encourage everybody, check out the interviews. Read the freakingcomics.com, I think is what you said your URL is now. Yeah, that's a new one. Yep. I hadn't heard about that before, but that will be available on our website and social media as well. And check it out. But yeah, it's just, you know, again, just to be able to see and hear. And now I've got the bug. I'm going to get myself back to a Comic-Con here pretty soon, too. check it out. But it sounds like you guys had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. I mean, we walked into the convention center. There was lightsaber battles going on, people out there and having a lot of fun, tons and tons of costumes, which I do showcase in the video. There was a full-size Chewbacca walking around in a really, really great costume. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you know, you got to respect the cosplayers too. I do that, and I actually do play a Wookiee, but trying to do the stilts and me did not get along, and my health insurance kind of told me if I wanted to do that to get a different health insurance. So I ended up playing a child Wookiee, which I'm the right size for. So that worked out. But I love to see the cosplayers that do that because, you know, they're 10 feet tall and boy, do they have presence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. He was the center of attention for sure. Like I said on the thumbnail, there was a disco themed sort of stormtrooper with gems all over their outfit. So it was really a lot of fun. There was Ghostbusters there. There was all kinds of different things. So really a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the Montreal Comic Con in June.
So to sum it up, let me ask you this. If you had to pick one, what was your favorite thing that you saw?
I think it was the vendors, the artists, who were also selling their products, but it was great to see so much local talent. It was great to see such local artists being showcased, and just the people attending those booths, like they weren't ignored. People weren't just walking by and ignoring them. People were showing up. They were like, hey, what's this comic about? This is brand new. And you could see the heart in the artists when they were talking about their work. So that was really, really fun to see.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Well, listen, thank you for letting us know all about this. And we can't wait to hear about Montreal. And the other thing I'm going to throw out here, we've been getting a lot of questions for you from some of your past segments. So I think we're going to be putting you on the spot here pretty soon with some of that as well.
I love it. I love to hear those questions. Please send more. See if you could try to stump me or at least ask for my advice because I love to give that out. And keep bringing them.
Great. Sounds good. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Bill.
After hearing that, I am looking forward to getting back to another Comic-Con. I think we need to do that. Bill Gretchen, what's the next one coming up? Do we have one we can go to?
I don't know. I haven't looked. I
think Silver State's coming up.
Yeah, Silver State, I'm thinking about maybe we'll do that. It's in Reno, so we'd have to get down there for it, but that might be kind of fun. I know Rose City's coming up later this year, so that'll be cool. But we'll let you know, and until next week, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2025 by User-Friendly Media Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.